What's good, Waging World? It's your boy, Five Star in Vegas, broadcasting live as always from beautiful Summerlin, Nevada. And it is beautiful this morning. This is the Waging World. I'm here with the OG of the show, my good friend, man, the only Sacramento Kings fan that I know. What's good, Spreaders? How are you this morning?
Man, I'm excited to talk to you about everything that's happened. It feels like it's been about 6 months since the last episode with all the news that went down. So we got a lot on the docket today. Can't wait to dive right in.
Man, before we get started, I have to talk about some things going on in the national media that is crazy to me. As you know, we've been doing this show for a long time, Spread. You and I have been together 3 years putting the show out. And a lot of times I say things on the show, give out information. People who've been watching a long time and know Five Star's not just running his mouth. He's saying it because he knows something. You know, some people probably think I just be blowing hot air. But somehow it seems like it always ends up that I'm correct, or that somehow the mainstream media get it 2 or 3 weeks later after we put it on the show. Let's look at this whole scenario now. They're talking about Cowboys drafting Shedeur Sanders, and they'll talk about on First Take about Prime might be the bargaining chip to be the coach of the Cowboys in order to get Shedeur. What did we hear that first, at Spread?
Yeah, hey, and I wasn't sure if that would happen, right? I'm worried about that dead cap hit from Dak, but you're telling me that it's going to happen, and I distinctly remember that conversation a couple weeks ago on here, because I remember thinking, how are they going to get around this cap? So, yeah, I mean,
and remember what
you can
we
go
spoke
check
about.
The tape. We were discussing it.
What else did we speak about that situation? Remember I said that before Dak was ever said he's hurt for the season, I said that Dak got benched. He wasn't really hurt. They're going to try to figure out some type of way to get it where they can write it off on insurance. Remember that? So he would plan that the Cowboys about to tank. And now guess what happens? Dak has a season-ending surgery suddenly, right?
Yeah, and boy, that was the weakest the teams looked all year against Philadelphia. And we'll dive into that into our full recap. But man, I thought my Raiders looked bad. That Cowboys, that might have been the worst performance we've seen from a team so far this year.
Definitely. And then now people are starting to report that Shedeur wants to be a Raider. And now we're also seeing that Coach Prime went on national TV on Speak, and he told them, yes, he's not going to allow Shedeur to be drafted by any team. Who was the first to report that on the Waging World?
That was us. And I remember you talking about it. I remember all these conversations specifically because, do you remember I asked you, I said, do you think that Deion's going to hurt his draft stock? And you told me, no, it's the opposite, right? Yeah. I remember these conversations. You said they might not like him in the media, but they love him in the locker rooms. He doesn't drink. He doesn't do drugs, right?
No.
It's like Floyd Mayweather. They talk a lot, but they live a really clean lifestyle, and they're really dedicated to their sport and their craft. So, I mean, these conversations, you can go check them all, but I remember them in my head because it feels like we just discussed this yesterday.
Coach Prime is high character, and him being the type of guy is what makes it where he's a really good bet for bettors like ourselves on Saturdays. Even though he's had 80% of the public on his team the last 7 weeks, they've still been able to cover because of his character. He's not a guy who's quick to sell out or sell his team out from outside influences, and that's real important to us. But I'm saying all this just to say, man, they got to stop what they're doing, man. We used to call it swag jacking when I was growing up. Swag jackers. You know, I come out with a certain type of coat on or find some sneakers or something and pop out at the club. And then the next week, you got a guy who's dressed just like you. That's kind of what's going on with the media and this show. I get a lot of information before most people get it. And the reason why is because I'm tied in kind of to the underground, man, and to the underworld with me being the guy who used to be large in the music industry and in entertainment and booking and wheels and all types of little different hustles and entrepreneur routes that I took while in Houston. I met a lot of people over the years. I was one of those guys who was traveling to New York and LA at 19 before a lot of people were even getting on planes. And I was just a guy that loved to do business at a young age and met a lot of people who controlled things. And I learned early to always talk to the guys that make decisions and not the workers. And it benefited me well because I know a lot of people that people watch the show don't know that I know. And that's why I have the information that I have, because you know about the 6 degrees of separation, right? Everyone knows someone who knows six people, you know, around, and within those six people is usually someone that knows you or someone, you know, right? Yeah. And I benefited from that, from having a real large network of people who, you know, I stay in touch with and that stay in touch with me and know me from a whole different world. Most of them don't even know I bet sports, you know. So those relationships have it where I have some intel and I share with you guys here on the Wager World that a lot of people don't have. And I pride myself on never just speaking. Like, every word that I say to you guys about things that I learned, it's already vetted, because I'm just that type of person, because I care about my reputation and my character. I don't want to be a person who sits on here and just makes up stuff. I'm not one of those guys dropping hot takes. When I say something, it's coming from a really good source, and that's why I'm able to say it, and that's why I was first on a lot of these things about that was going to happen with the Sanders. And I can also tell you that most likely he'll be a Raider, because Tom Brady runs that organization, and Shadur would rather live in the Las Vegas area and commute quickly to Colorado, which is going to be the family base, rather than go back down south, kind of like me, and deal with all that family and friends and mess that's in Texas waiting on him, all the trouble, all the haters. So I expect Shadur to be in Las Vegas, but come on, man. Big Meter, quit biting the Wager World, man. Y'all stop with the swag jacket, man. You know, show some credit to the show. If you heard it from here, you saw it on the TL. If not, like I said, maybe it's because they get it slow. I get it from the chitlin circuit, so I probably get it a little bit faster than them. All right, Spread, let's get into the pads.
All right, the first game we need to talk about, UCLA was +7, taking on Iowa. Like I said, man, so much has happened since last time we talked. I know I paid attention to this game, and I can't remember what happened. Break it down for us.
Man, being the man Foster in those black old school satin jackets, you see Cino didn't show up. He was on the other side and gave it out and all that type of stuff. Man, they came out with them all black NWA jackets, and I knew it was problems, man. And really beautiful uniforms also that the UCLA players wore. Man, that quarterback Garbus tried his best to get that game away. Like, he was doing his best, man. He tried really some bad turnovers early in the game. UCLA really dominated this game. Really should have never been close if you watched it like I did from the beginning to the end. Eric Bieniemy finally made the wise decision and allowed those great running backs over at UCLA to take over the game. I know that their running game has struggled this season, but it's clearly evident that physicality where they're hanging a hat on in that Bruins locker room, and I'm really for it. If you remember, my main reason for taking them in this game was I believe that their defensive line would be able to shut down that running game for Iowa, and did it ever. Completely shut down Caleb Johnson. He was a non-factor, and if he's not breaking big runs for chunk plays for Iowa, they're not that good, man. They were also able to push them off the ball offensively, as I said, run the ball after they saw that Garbus was messing up. And Garbus made just enough couple throws that we needed to get over the hump. But great win for us on that one. Me and the clients had the first half UCLA +3.5. We had the game +7. We also had Moneyline +240. So a trifecta victory for the Supreme clientele.
All right. We just talked about Shadur and Dion. And I do remember that one, 5-star. Texas Tech got off to a good start in that game. But by the second half, the class, especially with the passing in the pocket, was the difference. So, you know, while Texas Tech got off to a good start, Colorado showed why they are now ranked and continue to move up in these standings. And boy, if they put together some more performances like that, just off the strength of people wanting to see them, I'd like to see them in the 12-team playoff.
Colorado is a really good team, man. Just hit you with that. I told you. I got to, because for how long, Spread, have I been talking about on here that Dion needed 2 years and he would take his team to a different height? I saw him do the same thing at Jackson State. Another thing about this Colorado program, last year, they actually overachieved. The books had them to win. The over and under was two games. They won four games. So they doubled expectations. They end up getting in a great draft class. That offensive tackle they have, the left tackle, is going to be the number one draft pick one day. But Colorado, this isn't just a mistake that this happened. Coach Prime is one of the smartest guys in football. Now, all of a sudden, when he does the interview this past week, he's telling people about his approach to the transfer portal and why he does what he does, why he does what he decides to. And guess what? Now he's brilliant. He's being called brilliant for it. It's funny how that works, you know. So he was saying he was crazy last year, but they survived having tortillas thrown at them, you know, in Lubbock all night and getting into it with a really rowdy fan base. I don't know if you saw the game or not, but true greatness is being able to beat the team across the field from you and also being able to beat the public. The public is 80% of their tickets have been backing the Buffaloes the last 7 weeks. It's funny because all these people dislike them, but they're steadily betting on them. And keep coming through for bettors like ourselves. Once again, just a great performance. The thing I like about this Colorado team is they have spurt ability, you know, and that's one thing right there that can serve you well in any type of sport. Their ability to just avalanche you real quick. They can hit a couple big plays with Shador hitting those great receivers, and then after that, get some plays on defense because that defensive line is playing its ass off for Warren Sapp. So great job by Colorado. I got the prime seats. I'm going to declassify them by the end of the year when they go to the college football playoffs and call out a lot of people in the media who were talking crazy about Coach Prime, about Shador Sanders, and about their move from Jackson State to Colorado and saying that he would not be successful.
So explain to me this game, because I was surprised on Friday and I said, how is this team, Kansas, that has a terrible record, just such a short favorite against the team Iowa State that has a really good record, and they're in the same conference. Like, I can understand if it's a good conference versus a bad conference. Did they get a quarter? Did they get a bunch of players back or something? Because if you just tuned in and that was the first college football game you watched of both those teams, Kansas looked really good. That was one that really shocked me because they're in the same conference. How was Kansas able to get that win, and why did they look so much better than what their record is?
Well, Kansas is a team that's really played good all season, and they have a lot of their components, like their quarterback, Jalen Daniels, is back. Skinner at wide receiver. They're really good running back returning. It's just they lost a bunch of close games, man. As I told you last show when we were speaking about this game, I could see why the books put out that number. You already know my saying, if the line looks fun, it's probably money. And the reason why is if the books see something, and my football can see it as well, which I did on this game, because Kansas has a really explosive offense, very talented team in general, and they're about to be eliminated from being able to go to a bowl if they take another loss. So they had a lot of motivation in this game to play their best type of football. Also, we're on a neutral field. They're playing in the NFL stadium. I knew Kansas was going to win this game. Iowa State, I think they were missing their quarterback. And also, besides that, they just, under Matt Campbell, have never been a really explosive team offensively. They have a certain style that they win with. And with Kansas offense hitting on all cylinders, like it was on Saturday, just didn't have a chance. So great win for us. We cashed that one 97-5 and with the Supreme clientele.
Yeah, it was a fun Saturday for us.
Always.
LSU, that was the one that we didn't get, right?
Well, I didn't bet this game, but, you know, we spoke about
it. I did. So I missed on this one. They were catching three against Alabama, and that wasn't even close, right?
When I speak about LSU and the Saints, I'm never going to bet their games, because if I try to bet their games, it just doesn't go right for me. Even when I spoke about it and kind of leaned toward LSU, but you remember you asked me a question before that game. You said, who would be the better pro? You remember what I said?
Yeah, Milroe.
Yeah, and I think we kind of saw that in this game, that was the difference in the game, was a dominating performance by Milroe, who can really hit another switch and take over games, and Nussmeier, who's a guy who he's limited, man, and we saw it. And if he gets down on himself, he can really turn the ball over and be a bad player. And that's why I worry about – I don't really think that he'll play on the next level because of that. But I think that Milroe, with the right coaching, Jalen Milroe has a chance to be a special quarterback in the NFL, probably a little bit more electrifying Jalen Hurts. So watch for that in the coming future. LSU was eliminated from the playoff contention, in my opinion, and they don't really deserve it. It's time for the LSU administration to start really thinking about moving off Brian Kelly. And that's not being over. And that's not an overreaction or anything like that. It's just the facts. If you can't see it, then you don't understand football. Because if you watch the LSU over the years, it's a certain style. It's a certain bravado that that team has. It's certain ways that they just didn't lose. When Mad Hatter was there, Coach O was there, and they were fully stocked, no injuries, either they're going to win games or they're going to lose close ones. But they're going to always be competitive and always show a lot of fight. That's missing under these Brian Kelly teams. They mail it in too much on too many games. And as a person who's been a lifelong LSU fan, I do not like that. They have to get off Brian Kelly, bring in someone that can recruit better and someone who has a connection to the youth, someone who understands the new culture, that can relate to kids better than Brian Kelly. It's time for him to get out the way. He's an old head. He should be more of a university like Michigan. I don't want Brian Kelly as my coach in LSU. He does not fit the LSU mantra.
All right. We got this one right. Georgia taking on Ole Miss. And now Georgia has two losses. However, they're still favored against Tennessee, and they're still ranked at number 12. So Georgia takes the tough loss there. What did you think about the game, and is Georgia still alive for the 12-team playoff?
Georgia's still alive for the 12-team playoff simply because they get a chance now to play Tennessee this week. And not only do they play Tennessee, I think the Tennessee starting quarterback will not be playing. So
is that why they're a seven-point favorite? I was kind of surprised.
Yeah, that's why I shot up. But, see, yeah. Georgia is going to have problems all year. Simply because the fact is they gave a plane to a kid. And another who was the first one to report that. I talked about it extensively in September that Carson Beck did not need an NIL for a private plane. People probably was looking like, oh, what is Five Star talking about? You hate? No, I'm not. I've been young before and had access to things and watched myself crash out from having too much at a young age and not being mature enough to know how to handle those things. And you can see that his play has completely deteriorated. He's regressed so much this season from the guy he's been the prior year. And I think it's because he's having too much of a good time. He's 22, 21 years old, somewhere up in there. If you got access to a private plane at that age, Spread, are you and your girlfriend going to go have some great trips?
Man, my guess is he's got more than one.
Exactly. So that's the thing, man. They gave him too much too fast. And it's hilarious to me that a guy, this is why I talk about racism a lot in media coverage. And I try to be kind and just say it's innate bias, because most of these guys like to write about teams that they grew up rooting for and guys that look like them that they're familiar with in their family, right? So maybe they don't even know that they're being racist, but it comes off that way to me as a black man, because it seems like I'm always at the footstep of the innate bias. And in this situation, look at how Paul Feinbaum is an SEC reporter. His job is to talk about the SEC. Somehow he's always talking about Coach Prime in Colorado, like especially last year. Like all he could do is talk about how horrible Coach Prime was. But your job is to cover the SEC this year. Talk about how horrible Coach Prime and Colorado are, and how bad they are for college football. But your job is to cover the SEC. But somehow he never said anything at all about Carson Beck getting an NIL deal for a plane. Now imagine if Shedeur Sanders would have got an NIL for a charter plane. It would have been the top story about what are we doing with NIL? We're giving these kids too much. So I don't really take much into national reporting on any subject because I understand that most of these guys are coming from a lot of ignorance. Most of them haven't even been around other people and other types of, you know, people outside of the groups of their families and their fraternity members that they were around. So they only see life in one manner. And it's really sad because they're trusted to cover the sport nationally and report for everyone. But I just don't understand Paul Feinbaum not talking about this. But as far as in the game, good showing by Ole Miss. I can tell you one thing. They got a backup that can play. That's who saved the game, because when the game first initially started, if you watched every snap like I did, Ole Miss was struggling, man, to move the ball early. Jackson Dart seemed shook. They were getting them off of the field so quick. And they ended up bringing in 19-year-old Austin Simmons, man. Left-handed kid. He's from North Gwinnett. I used to actually have a spot in Gwinnett County. That's right outside Atlanta, North Atlanta. And, boy, Simmons can spin it. And they went right down the field when he entered the game. And, man, he gave them the spark they needed. I was surprised that he came off the field. I think what happened is that Jackson Dart was injured and said, man, I better get up off my ass and get out here and play before this kid takes my job permanently. But that kid could play. And I also found out he was a relief pitcher, man. And he went 2-0 with a 3.21 ERA for the Ole Miss baseball team. So keep your eyes on the name Austin Simmons. He's a freshman for Ole Miss that's going to end up being a really dynamic quarterback, because he came and saved the day. And any Ole Miss fan that watched that game will tell you that, because it looked like Georgia was about to take off and dominate this game, and that the defense wasn't going to give up anything, and they were going to play an old Georgia type of game with controlling the line of scrimmage and getting some turnovers and things like that and running the ball and protecting Carson Beck. But, man, he wasn't going for it, man. Great drive by Austin Simmons when he comes in, puts up the first touchdown for the Rebels, and after that, they don't look back because they pretty much dominate Georgia. Just a horrible game by Carson Beck. And did you see the thing about the kid, Jake Pope, who was celebrating with Ole Miss fans after Georgia lost? He was a Georgia player, and he was running around and having a great time with the Ole Miss players and the fans.
Really? No, I didn't
see
that.
Yes, man. I keep warning people about this Georgia program. I don't know what kind of guys Kirby Smart is recruiting, but be careful, man. Don't turn to the new Florida.
Let's move to the NFL. The New York Giants and the Carolina Panthers played in Germany. Started at 6:30 a.m. my time. Or saw some of it, but to be honest, it wasn't a very compelling game. Bryce Young is starting to look better. Daniel Jones continues to look bad. And that was the story from that game. Did I leave anything out that you saw that you wanted to get out there for this one?
The Giants are tanking as well, pretty much. That's what we're seeing. The type of performance against a team as sorry as the Panthers, oh, man, that was sad. They have one bright spot on their team. Well, two. Tyrone Tracy and Malik Nabers. So those are good building blocks. I don't know if Daboll is even going to be the coach there. Usually the Giants are pretty much like the Steelers. They try to, you know, be pretty, you know, patient with their coaches. I don't know if they allow him to get a look, because he hasn't had a team without, you know, Daniel Foodstamps as quarterback. So maybe he does get an opportunity to get a new quarterback over there. I heard that Daniel Jones might not even play the rest of the season, that they might sit him as they try to figure out how to trade him or get off the contract.
Yeah, and the reason is that he has the injury kicker. So if he were to be hurt, then next year's contract becomes fully guaranteed. As it is right now, if they were to sit him for the rest of the season, they could get off him for a much less of a cap hit. And that seems pretty obvious.
But the fact that he's even under contract with them long term is just baffling to me. Now, anyone with any football sense, you know, knew that they should have put that money into Saquon Barkley and let him go. They could have picked up Darnold or anybody off the street and been better than they are right now. Just bad management.
Yeah, and when we talk about this, a lot of times it's not, you know, obviously the play on the field isn't good, but the real problem is the contract. If he was at a veteran minimum there, he would be a bridge quarterback and it's fine, but the fact they invested all that money. My final thought on what you think, I do think they'll bring Daboll back. Like you said, anybody who sees football, I don't think that's a coaching issue. It's an execution issue. Jones is leaving throws on the field left and right, and it feels like they know that Daboll can get it done with the right guy, and he's probably still getting some benefits of the success that he showed with Josh Allen. The Pittsburgh Steelers squeaked one out against the Washington Commanders. Pittsburgh moves to 7-2. The Commanders fall to 7-3, I believe. And the Commanders face a short week, and we'll be talking about their game coming up because they're going to play tomorrow night here. But, boy, another win for Tomlin as a dog. What did you see in that one?
That was a good game, man. I watched every snap. I was so blessed on that one to cast the first half that we played that one heavy in the group, and they scored right before the half. And boy, it got shaky at first because the kid dropped the touchdown pass initially. Jaden Daniels threw him, but just a really good game, man. Just an old veteran like Russell Wilson showing why he's the OG. He wins the game with an outstanding touch pass to Mike Williams. Sees it early, doesn't miss, and drops a dime. Continues to be one of the best deep passers in the history of the NFL. Russell Wilson with the moon ball that he loves to throw, and Mike Williams makes the adjustment on the great pass and comes down with the game-winning touchdown. And then he seals the game using some cadence, just really OG moves by Russ Wilson. Gets him to jump outside the young defenders for the Commanders. In the neutral zone, game over, game set match. Really good comeback right there by the Steelers. The Commanders blew this game. They had this game won a couple times, and they continued to let the Steelers stay in the game. Most impressive about this victory, just all Mike Tomlin, man. Mike Tomlin is the guy, and him putting in Russell Wilson has changed everything for that offense. I talked about this last season as well. Russell Wilson did not play bad in Denver. He could have easily gotten that team to the playoffs. Sean Payton didn't want to get him to the playoffs. He wanted to crash him out. He wanted him on the bench. He wanted to figure out a way to get out of that contract because from being in cap hell with the Saints for so long, he figured out the best approach to rebuilding this team is have a quarterback on a rookie contract. Let's get some pieces around him, and let's try to build the defensive line and offensive line with the best players. Smart approach, but unfortunately, Russell Wilson was the one that ended up looking like the fall guy for everything that happened in Denver. The year prior to that, he had Nate Hackett, the dumbest coach to ever been hired in the history of the NFL, right up there with Tom Sula for the 49ers, just an idiot. So it was no way that Russell Wilson was going to be effective in Denver. I always dreamed of him being able to get with Mike Tomlin. Mike Tomlin is a guy that understands Russell Wilson and his approach to football. He's not judging him. He's not knocking him for his religion. He's not knocking him for being a guy who's excited to play football every day because Tomlin respects that about him. And I think that this team is real dangerous going into the playoffs. I think that they're the biggest challenge to Kansas City. And I also think that they're going to beat the Ravens coming up this week. The funny thing about Mike Tomlin is, man, I've been a fan of his so long. Mike Tomlin looks like he's 35 years old, but he's been coaching a really long time. And so with me being a script writer, I always wanted to write a film and put Omar Epps in the film playing Mike Tomlin. Only thing is Omar Epps looks old as hell now. He wouldn't be able to play him now. Mike Tomlin still looks 35, man, so. Tomlin's a special dude, man, and he continues to age like wine, man, and he's getting better and better at his job, and I'm just so glad he finally has a quarterback to help him reach his lofty expectations, and that's a Super Bowl.
The New Orleans Saints were the beneficiaries of the new coach bump. They get the win at home over the Atlanta Falcons. That one's a tough one to get involved with because the Saints have been playing so bad. But we knew it was a division rivalry. We knew that they're up for each other no matter what each team's record was. And the Saints get it done. My question for you on this one, is that just a one-week thing, or do you think this guy's going to help them play well for the rest of the year, kind of like Antonio Pierce did with the Raiders last season?
I'm going to say a one-week thing, and the only reason why is because we saw MVS with the Saints for the first time. I didn't even know he was on the team. He made some really great plays deep on some deep balls from Derek Carr. But let's just be real about this. And shout out to the chat. Everybody hit the like. Everybody who watches, everyone in the community watches the Waving World. One guy had the nerve to say I owed him some money because I said that I was betting everything that the Falcons wouldn't lose this game. You must don't watch the show if you feel like that this was a bad read by me, because we always talk about bad beat, bad break, bad handicap. This was just a bad beat. You have the most accurate kicker in NFL history. A lot of people don't know that Young Ho Koo is that. He's the most accurate kicker in NFL history since November 2023. He beat Justin Tucker for that. Any kick over 100 field goals attempted, he has the highest accuracy rate. The kid made 32 straight field goals under 50 yards last year. And just I looked this game, he misses three after the first meeting with the Saints. He was 4 out of 4 and hit a game-winning career-long 58-yard field goal. So him going 1 of 4, missing two field goals within 40 yards, within 45 yards, man, that's just a bad beat. If the Saints and the Falcons play each other 10 times, the Falcons are going to win 8. So I can always live with that. And, guys, this isn't rocket science. This isn't something that's, put it like this, this isn't something that's easy. If it was, you wouldn't be on the show. You would be able to do what I can do and just go to the book yourself and make your own play. You're on the show because you're trying to learn. We're not going to be 100% every time. If you bet straight on all the plays we played this year, you'll be really up. So one L that we see the kicker miss three field goals that he always makes, is there no reason to be in the chat bitching to me about what you lost, man? Come on, man. Man up. On to the next game. Turn the page. Sometimes these things happen, especially in the NFL, when we know a lot of money's involved. And it was 87% of the money was on the Falcons.
Let's talk about my favorite game of the weekend. Because the Arizona Cardinals, they didn't just win 5-star. They kicked their butts up and down the field. I know the Jets had their nice little story on primetime against the Texans last week, but it's back to exactly what we thought for this team. And they got a lot of money in two guys that are probably a little bit too old to get things done, and that's Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams. What were your thoughts as Kyler Murray? Man, he's got a chance to win that NFC West. You know, the 49ers, they're great on offense, pretty good on defense. They can't play special teams. I don't know if Jonathan Gannon's going to allow that to fly the way Shanahan does. So Cardinals are live, and if the season were end today, they would be the winners in the NFC West. What'd you see in that one?
I find myself every show saying, I told you. I find myself saying this, man. I don't want to, but how life has it is always ended up this way. I told you guys last show that they were going to beat the Jets' ass, that the Cardinals were going to dominate them, and they were going to show that the only reason that the Jets beat the Texans was the NFL. Simple as that, and it's just how it goes sometimes, because this is still a business and it's a lot of money involved on these games. I also have spoken highly about Kyler Murray when everyone else was down on him, saying he was a gamer and all this weird stuff, and I told people that he did not deal with disorganization well. He did not deal with guys who were loose like Cliff Kingsbury. Now he has a guy who's buttoned up, a guy who knows what he's doing, and Jonathan Gannon is running a real NFL system over there, and guys are really coming to play with a plan, and now you're seeing the best of Kyler Murray. He's a magician, man. He's one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. He's one of those guys that you want the ball when it's the end of the game and you're trying to have a drive for a score. He's always done. He's always been a good player. So I'm not surprised in the least bit. I'm not surprised at Arizona's success at all. And I'm definitely not surprised that they beat the hell out the Jets. Hopefully soon, we won't hear anything else about the Jets or the Cowboys.
My final thing on Kyler is he's going to have an opportunity to prove it this year. We know he can put these numbers up in the regular season. We know he can beat these inferior teams. What he really needs, if he wants to enter that upper echelon and be in that category, is a playoff win. And if things continue to go well for this team, they don't have any catastrophic injuries, he's going to have an opportunity to do that.
This is the first time he's had a good team spread. He hasn't had a team besides this. He's been dealing with some silly coaches over there since he's been in the NFL, for one. And he still got them to a playoff game and lost. And I wouldn't say that they beat some sorry teams this year. I think that they've had some really quality wins this year.
No, I'm saying that this year, too. I'm just saying, if he wants to get in that top 10 conversation, all the quarterback rankings, I do my own.
He already in the top 10.
No one is putting him in there. They all putting him between 10 and 15.
I don't care what they say.
I put him around. When I did mine, I had to pull it up.
I can't name 10 quarterbacks in the NFL better than Kyler Murray.
Let me hear you try. I'm gonna pull it up right now. I already know you're gonna get mad. Open.
Yeah, because you about to say Brock Purdy, and that's bullshit.
Oh, I am gonna say Brock Purdy.
Yeah, he's not. If you put Brock Purdy on Arizona, they wouldn't have won a game this year. Kyler Murray on the 49ers, they're 8-2 or whatever the how many games people have played.
All right, here's the people I had ahead of him: Mahomes, Allen, Jackson, Burrow, Stafford, Herbert, Jaden Daniels. Here's where I don't know. I want to hear your thoughts here. Kirk Cousins.
Jaden Daniels is not, I'm the biggest Jaden Daniels guy in the world. Jaden Daniels is not better than Kyler Murray, man.
You don't think so?
Hell no. What is wrong with you?
He's way more accurate in the underneath passes.
No, he's not.
I like his accuracy underneath.
Put Kyler Murray in that same offense.
He was in the same offense. Is Kingsbury running it?
No, he wasn't. Cliff Kingsbury was not running LSU's offense, what he's running out over there. That's not what he was running. He was running the run and shoot.
All right. I got Cousins ahead of him, but I'll second guess that. What do you think?
Kirk Cousins is up there, in there somewhere.
I got ahead about of him. What do you think of that?
I'm not going to say ahead. I'm going to just say they're all in the top 10 group. But I want to hear these other, because if you say Brock Purdy, I'm about to cut off this broadcast.
Well, I'm going to say Purdy. But let's hear the other ones. I got Goff. I got Hurts. What do you think of Hurts?
They're about the same. They're in the same little group.
C.J. Stroud.
About the same. The only thing that's different, Kyler brings a whole different level of athleticism, and he's done it longer. CJ has to bounce back this year because Kyler's been getting pressure his whole career. And CJ, this is his first time really dealing with a lot of pressure on every play and also bad play calling. Bobby Slowick sucks. We'll talk about that a little bit later.
We're going to get into that right now. The last one I had of him, we did the QB rankings for the show I do over on FanSpeak. I had Jordan Love ahead of him. What do you think of that?
Jordan Love's up in there, but Kyle is up in the top 10, man. They're all in. All right. It's a little group. You know, it's a little group of we know who the top guys are.
Yeah. All right. But let's move right into this because we had messages on Twitter. People want to know what you thought of this game. The Sunday Night Football debacle. There was turnovers left and right. Jared Goff was like the third team in the past 25 years to throw 5 interceptions and win. I have to hear your thoughts on this one. I actually held off talking to you so we'd hear it on the show and it'd be authentic. Well, what did you think of that Texas performance?
Well, when the late announcement came out on the betting perspective, when the late announcement came out that Nico Collins wasn't playing, me and the group went and took the Texans first half, plus I think it was a half a point or one or something like that, and we were able to cash easily and get the money line on that one. As you know, I always bet the first half. Because I'd rather watch the game as a fan at the end of the game because that's when all the jinky stuff started. So we were able to catch the first half, and it wasn't due to the offense. It was due to the defense by the Texans. They played really well, 5 interceptions off Goff, slowed down the running game in the first half. It's just Slowick, man. The Texans are supposed to win that game. They don't score any points in the second half. They're the first team in history to – get 5 turnovers, 5 interceptions from a quarterback and not win the game. And a lot of this is on D'Amico. You know, D'Amico is allowing Sloan to do what he wants on that side of the ball. Also, D'Amico is struggling with some time management things, too, and some in-game adjustments as well. Second halves have not been good for the Texans. That's why I've been betting them first half only. It seems like they go in the locker room and don't come out ready to play ball. And second, they don't adjust to the adjustment by the other team at halftime. So those are some things that we're going to have to watch. But we still have to remember this is one of the youngest teams in the NFL. Their coach is under 40 years old, and this is his second season coaching the NFL franchise. He was only a DC for maybe a year or two. Bobby Slowick hasn't been an OC before these past two seasons before, first time calling plays. And CJ is in his second year, and teams are getting more tape on him. And with the horrible interior blocking by that team, they have him shook. He's seeing ghosts now. He's not comfortable operating from the pocket. He missed a bunch of throws. Slowick drew up some pretty good ones last game, and he missed them. But what I don't like about Slowick is that he's sticking to these West Coast principles. And West Coast principles make you do a whole bunch of thinking, as you know. Like, you have to be a really smart guy, and it has to become second nature to you. I think that CJ is way more comfortable just playing the type of style that Ben Johnson coaches over there with the Lions, and that's just spread teams. Let's get our receivers out in space. When the box is light, run the ball with our running back, you know, behind our line. Like, it's that simple with the type of quarterback that has the type of accuracy and ability to stretch the field like CJ. He can use every inch of the field with his arm. So I just don't get the approach by – you're playing CJ. The West Coast offense was created to protect quarterbacks who weren't that talented, as you know. Like, that's the whole reason that it was protected, to try to kind of like, you may give them half the field, the guys who are a little bit athletic, who can bootleg, but it was centered mostly around running the ball through the stretch and then the bootleg. Those are the main principles of the West Coast, and then now they have all these derivatives, and they're mostly about short receptions and yard after catch from receivers, and having certain types of angles on passes where you're making sure that, you know, you're hitting the ball at a certain type of angle to create yards after the catch. That's mostly what the West Coast principles surround about: post routes, flat routes, you know, tight end angle route. I mean, running back angle routes. I feel like that offense kind of like is against everything that CJ's good at. Now he's got to turn his back to the defense because he's under center the whole time. He needs to come to the line like he did at Ohio State, see the entire field in the shotgun, and be able to read the defense and see where the weaknesses are at. I just don't see why Slowick won't change up. And it tells me that you're not innovative or wise enough to see what's going on. For example, Ben Johnson, they talked about the winning play on the screen pass that won the game for the Lions. The play before that, Adrian Autry had beat the offensive lineman for the Lions. Ben Johnson was wise enough to say, let him come again, since he's really happy that he just beat you really badly. He's going to be itching for a sack. We're going to throw a screen behind him. That's the type of stuff that Slowick isn't doing. He's not, when everything gets busy, he's going to his pad and going back to his principles like a robot, instead of being able to. The great thing about Ben Johnson, I'm going to play chess. Whatever the move by my opponent is, now let me make a counter move. And he's really failing the Texans. The Texans have a ways to go. This is going to be a learning experience year. They'll probably get to the playoffs. They maybe win the first game at home, but I don't expect them to go to the AFC Championship this season.
I mean, my only comment on that is, and I know everybody loves Ben Johnson, I think it's pretty easy to call plays when you have the best offensive line in the league. And you talked about the guard play of that Texans, and you could be, I'm not taking anything away from what you said about Slowick probably needs to adjust, especially since, like you mentioned, this is one of the worst interiors in the league. But I know everyone, Ben Johnson is going to be the hottest thing right, as a head coaching candidate. Let's see him run the offense without the best offensive line.
He's going to be good. You know why he's good?
He's going to be good, but I'm just saying it's a lot easier to drop. I mean, those guys.
He might not even be a head coach. He might just stay right there with Campbell because he said that he might.
And if he does, he'll continue to be successful. But yeah. I'm just saying, when you got Penei Sewell, I'm not going to name them all off, but it's by far the best offensive line in the league, and that's going to make every play call look that much sharper. So,
but still, it's a lot of innovation that he does put in his play calls. And as I said,
I'm not saying, really, yeah, I'm not saying he's bad. I'm just saying, if you flip the teams, and he didn't have,
he wasn't winning in the middle. The Texans.
Yeah, because I think Sloak would look pretty good with Detroit too.
The spread offense was created by Texas high school coaches to because of the potential and talent. That's right. What it
and
was
they actually for. First run that I remember by the Houston Cougars with a quarterback named Andre Ware, who actually
they got it Ryan from the they got it from the, they got it from the high school. The high
okay,
school
but that's the first time I saw it.
The first person
was Andre Ware, and there was a white kid who did it right after that. I can't remember his name.
The first guy who started that was Art Briles. That was an innovator of the spread. And the spread offense was created because, like I said, a lot of teams were just powerful and strong in certain districts in Texas, and they just line up and beat your ass on the line. So the spread is created for teams with offensive linemen who can't block long, who can't hold up, because now you get in the spread, you make quick passes and quick decisions to get off the ball where you neutralize the defensive line. With the Texans having a weak offensive line, what sense does it make not only to go to the spread because you're protecting that offensive line now, but also you're making it where CJ can see the field and get off the ball quick, and he's more comfortable in that offense because he ran it in high school and at Ohio State. So what sense does it make to run the West Coast offense when we all know what made those 49ers teams good? What made those Broncos teams good to run the West Coast offense? Their line. They were great on the offensive line. So it's just ass-backwards thinking.
Great guard play as well. But the final thing I'll say about Sloak, because I hope you guys stick with him. I think you got a good coaching staff here. You're running into a rut. The West Coast offense, same offense, looked pretty good last year. Of course, they played that fourth-place schedule. So this is the growing pains that every team that's going through the rebuild, and trust me, as a Raiders fan, I'm jealous of that Texans rebuild you guys have pulled off. You know, because you're a serious AFC contender, and I know things look bleak right now, but you just make a couple little tweaks. Get Will Anderson back. We haven't talked about that. Get Nico Collins back in that lineup, and I think a lot of these problems might go away. So disappointing loss for the Texans, but we'll be looking ahead to them because they have a pretty fun matchup this week, if I remember right. I'm throwing these numbers in right now. Best they do there on Monday Night Football. All right. I thought this game sucked 5-star. I ended up watching the NBA 4-box. So I'm gonna watch some NBA. I did not watch the Los Angeles Rams lose to Miami Dolphins. Was I being a hater? Yes, because I was on the Rams. And you got to give McDaniel credit. And you got to give the defense credit because they didn't give Stafford time and they beat the Rams up front. The Rams couldn't establish a run game and they were getting pressure constantly. That was the difference between Stafford being effective in the red zone and settling for 5 field goals like he ended up doing. So great win for the Dolphins, and I'll have to readjust my rankings on them because I'd been pretty down on them. But I thought that was a quality win, especially their play at the line of scrimmage. What did you see?
Yeah, I gave the Dolphins out. I did a video as a free play and gave it out to guys. You know, I try to wait till the last second on these type of games just to see where the market at and get a feel for what everyone's saying about the game. And it was immediate to me that evening that the Dolphins were to play. My old saying that I always say over and over again, if the line looks fun, it's probably money. You're 2-6 Dolphins on the road. Why are they only getting less than a field goal at the Rams? What are the books seeing in that situation? Well, they saw that it was a lot of desperation from the Dolphins. They also saw that Tua was back. Tua not only opens up that offense with his ability to throw the ball, but with his ball handling. A lot of people don't pay attention enough to how well of a ball handler that Tua is with fakes, with them being able to do reverses, with them being able to do, different little counters and different little pitches where he might have to do a little option pitch. Or a shuttle pass. he has some really good hands, and it makes it where they can run other things than offense. I also was impressed with Miami's run game at Buffalo, so I knew that they would have some success in the run game. Also, I knew that Jalen Ramsey would have some inside information about how the Rams like to run that offense. He lined up against Cooper Kupp every day in practice, I'm sure, while he was there for so long. And his intel on McVay and the way they like to do things offensively definitely helped, because Matt Stafford looked completely shook. Another thing that was a factor was the defensive lineman coming back from Miami, the guy that they got in the offseason from the Ravens. I think Sadell is his name. He really played well, a really big play at the beginning of the game that kind of set the tone for the whole evening when he sacked Matt Stafford. So just a dominant performance, I feel like, by the Dolphins. And I think the books kind of tell you with their lines what's going to happen with the game. You just got to pay attention.
All right. That's it for NFL Sunday. Let's move on to Thursday Night Football, because we have an interesting matchup here, five-star. We talked about Jaden Daniels. We talked about the Washington Commanders coming up short against the Pittsburgh Steelers. But now they got a chance to get back on track. And the Philadelphia Eagles, they look great against what could arguably be, currently be the worst team in football. So give them credit. They did what they were supposed to do. And one thing I would point out from that game, it allowed them to rest a little bit, right? Well, the Commanders fought tooth and nail down to the very last play, giving it all out there. They were, Philadelphia was in the sidelines, you know, having some water, having a lap, and just kicking the Cowboys' butts. So Philadelphia is laying 3.5. I got a total of 49. What are your thoughts on this game?
Well, this is a division game. Got Washington coming off a loss, but really a good showing, like you said, in a really tough game. The Eagles are one of the more popular teams in the NFL, so I'm sure that the books, when they laid this line, kept that in mind, knowing that it was going to be always a lot of love for the Eagles by sports bettors, because, as I said, they're just one of those popular franchises. Washington is a popular franchise, not as much as it has been in the past, but I take all of those things into consideration when I'm looking at these standalone games, because remember, I always want to approach these as a trader, and what is the trader trying to accomplish? When I'm throwing that 3.5 out there, they're saying that the game is going to be pretty close, because I feel like if they thought that the Eagles would run away in this game, we'd be seeing a 6 or something like that. I think Jaden Daniels and all these guys are able to stay around. They own the third highest pressure rate when not blitzing at 38%. If they can kind of get in the face of Jalen Hurts, we've seen before that he can miss some throws and be really inaccurate. The Commanders, I just think that they're still underrated by a lot of people, especially the betting public, just because they have a rookie quarterback. Division game, short week, Thursday night, Eagles looking like they're rolling. Yeah, I think I'll be on in this one. I lean the Commanders with the points. It's not an official play yet. I will make a video on Thursday and tell you guys my official play on this one. But a key for me is whether Brian Robinson is back, for one thing. Another thing to look at in this game is maybe the over. As you know, the Commanders lead the league and getting into the red zone. 48% of the drives end up in the red zone, which is a ridiculous rate that they're on. And they're facing a Philadelphia team who's kind of hitting their stride offensively. They've looked good the last couple weeks on offense because they have A.J. Brown. We know A.J. Brown is the key to opening up their offense. They scored in the last few weeks 28 points, 37 points, 28 points, and 34 points. So with the young defense that Washington has, the only way that they can stay in this game is probably putting up points themselves. And with the line being at 3.5, I'd probably play the over on this one as well.
All right, you're looking at the over there. Let's move into my domain, the NBA Cup. So tonight's not NBA Cup. Tonight is just normal games.
Okay.
Just wanted to clear that up. But the Los Angeles Clippers are heading to Houston to take on the Rockets. I found an interesting trend here. I was actually surprised by this. But the Clippers are 9-1 in their last 10 against the Rockets. Yet the Rockets are laying 4.5. Do you think tonight is the night that Houston turns this thing around? Houston, I believe, has won 3 in a row, and all in impressive fashion. Şengün had a huge game in that last outing. So Rockets are playing well. Clippers, I still like this team. They play defense well. And, of course, James Harden's return to Houston. How are you approaching this one with the Rockets laying 4.5?
Yeah, you're right. The Clippers are 9-1 in the last 10 against the Rockets. It seemed like it's not hard for Ty Lue to get up for that game. He's a former Rocket. You know, a lot of people have ties to the Houston organization on that Clippers team, mainly James Harden, whose jersey is in the Raptors up there at Toyota Center. So he'll definitely be engaged. And this one, though, I'm going to go first half with the Rockets. The Rockets tend to start pretty fast, and for some reason the Clippers don't play as well until the second half. I think it's a lot to do with them being an older team, so they kind of like, you know, want to keep their energy until it really matters. You know, Harden kind of turns it on after the break and, you know, really getting to the offense and things like that. So I like the Rockets, as I said, first half. They've been really dominant in the first half. They won and covered the first half in the last 3 games. So I think that trend continues. They're at home. They're going to be really excited. Yeah, give me the Rockets at home, man. At home, they've been really good early. So I think they do the same thing they did against the Knicks and the Spurs and Washington. That's get up early and kind of just ride it out after that. So give me the Houston Rockets as an official play first half. I think -2.
All right, 5 stars on the Rockets, first half over the Clippers. Man, I was hoping we were going to get a great game here when the Memphis Grizzlies traveled to take on the Lakers. Memphis, of course, beat the Lakers by about 20 points towards the end of that game when the Lakers visited Memphis. And not only that, it made headlines because John Morant went out and basically said, I don't like those guys. I enjoyed running up the score on them. And, you know, we're always going to try our hardest against this team. So I thought that was kind of interesting. You know, he's one of those younger cats, and I know a lot of them like LeBron and stuff. He seems to be the one that doesn't really like the way he's doing his stuff. So it could be a little personal enmity there. However, he's not playing tonight, 5-star. The kind of, you know, what I was really looking forward to, this budding rivalry, right? Young gun versus the old guard. It's not going to happen. However, when he's been out of the lineup, Memphis is still playing well. A huge victory without him last week. This is one of the deepest, most well-coached teams in the league. I wouldn't be surprised to see Memphis covered here. I haven't got involved in this one, but I wonder if Memphis has been playing well, but will those comments kind of give the Lakers some incentive to pour it on and get a little get back for last week's game?
Yeah, I could definitely see that happening for sure. AD's playing for sure, right?
I mean, I'll double check right now. He's always on the what's it called injury report. So
on this game would be Scottie Pippen Jr. going over 12.5 points. As you know, he'll be the guy when Ja isn't playing, and he's been really good. The last was just maybe 7 games. The last 7 mm-hmm. games, he's averaged about 14 points per game. Little, you know, motivation for him too. The team that drafted him was the Lakers, and they ended up giving up on him, and he went to Memphis, and now he's found a role. I think that he gets his shots up with the ball in his hand a lot without Ja. So give me Scottie Pippen Jr. to go over 12.5 points in L.A.
Anthony Davis, D'Angelo Russell, both probable. I handicapped this game as if they were in doing my numbers today. Haven't got involved yet, but, you know, if it wasn't for them comments, I think I would be on the Grizzlies here because I think people are underrating them being out. And a team that I did that with yesterday was the Orlando Magic. You know, they struggled a little bit with Paolo out. Now they're finding their groove. They've won 3 games in a row by 20 points or more without Paolo in the lineup. So sometimes we think about the stars a little bit too much, but it's not just NBA action tonight, 5-star. We got some college football action as well. The Akron Zips heading to Northern Illinois. Northern Illinois Laying 15 and a half. What do you think here?
Man, this one right here is just depends on if Northern Illinois comes to play or not, basically, because they definitely can cover the line, even though that star running back Brown was injured for the season, hip drop tackles, man. And now these kids are switching it up, and the NFL players are switching up where they kind of ride you now, like kind of like cattle wrestling, but it still gets the same results. They got to take that out of football, man. If, I don't like when they grab these guys and they jump up in the air and ride them down, because it always ends up where they end up with a lower extremity injury, man. And unfortunately, a really good running back for them ended up that happened because of that. But, man, I don't know. Without Ontario Brown, they still got a good running game. Ethan Hampton, he's all right quarterback. His arm isn't all that. But I do love Northern Illinois' coach. As I said, it just boils down to me basically if they want to win this game by a blowout, if they come to play, or they're just running the clock out. That's what it's going to boil down to. They beat them last year 55-14. Akron beat them 44-12 the previous year, but before that it was 49-0. So a lot of blowouts have happened in this series. Just one of those weird MAC games, but it's going to be raining and overcast. So that's one thing to look at is the weather. On this one right here, it'd probably be a game that I might look towards a total. I did really well last night on the first half going over on a couple of those games. You get a low total on the first half on this one. It's only 23 points in the Akron and Northern Illinois game. Now, to me, that seems a little low, even with the weather. Just because Akron struggles to get people off the field, man. They gave up 24 points last week alone to Buffalo. And I think the Northern Illinois offense is a little bit more stout, actually, than them. They also gave up 24 points to Western Michigan first half. So I'll probably be on first half over 23 on this game. I think that's a really short number that's very attainable, even in that weather, for both teams.
All right. Next game on the docket for tonight.
Western Michigan taking on Ohio. Ohio is minus 11. How do we approach this one?
This game right here, two teams that are both in situations where they have a chance at a bowl, two veteran coaches who are both really good coaches, man, facing off. I think this one is one of those type of games you got to take the points. The last times that they played, Ohio is 7-1, but they're 2-6 against the spread. So Eastern Michigan is always able to keep it close against them, and I think they do so as well tonight. So give me Eastern Michigan plus 11 in this one.
All right, you're taking the points here. And for Friday, are you giving this one out right now? We got UCLA. They're taking on the Washington Huskies. This used to be a Pac-12 matchup. Now it's a Big Ten matchup. How are you approaching this one?
I'll definitely be on UCLA on this one. You guys know that I'm a huge fan of momentum, and I just tweeted out last week that I felt like UCLA was hitting that same little stage that we caught Arizona at last year, where they were figuring out how to play, figuring how to win, and they were riding the momentum. I like their physicality against Washington. I think that they can beat Washington up along the line, and I think that Eric Bieniemy is a really good play caller as well. He's the type of guy that can utilize not only the passing game, but also he knows how to run some really nice run game with all the stuff that he learned from Andy Reid over there at Kansas City. And now Ethan Garbers is finally pulling the trigger, right? I think Ethan Garbers bounces back after a really poor showing last week and plays a better game. Washington is good. You know, they got my guy, Jed Fish over there. And Jed Fish is a really, really good coach, man. But with that said, I just think that the amount of points that they're giving out on this one, I'm seeing 4.5 now. That's too many points for a Washington team that struggles to score against a UCLA team that's showing a lot of confidence, have a lot of really good players in the backfield over there. The easiest way to get the ball to playmakers is hand it off, and they got three guys who are really dangerous in the run game. Bieniemy getting comfortable with that offense, and I think that Deshaun Foster's message is getting across that locker room. So it's an official play for me. I'm going to continue to ride the Bruins. Give me UCLA plus 4.
All right. Sounds good. The last game that we're going to give out right now, in case the line moves, Houston Cougars taking on the Arizona Wildcats. Pretty much picked the winner. Arizona's minus one.
If the line looks funny, spread, it must be money. So if we look at this line and we see that the Cougars are 4-5 and traveling on the road and it's only a 1-point spread, it tells me everything that I need to know. I don't like where Arizona's going right now, man. Brett Brennan has not lived up to the high expectations. He had Tatario McMillan coming back at wide receiver. He had a really good quarterback coming back under center. And with all of that, they still have really underperformed. It's a big difference from the Big West and San Jose State to Arizona. And the way that Arizona is underachieving, I got to believe that something's going on in that locker room. I got to believe that Brennan's message isn't getting across to these kids, man, because their players are too good. You know how much I like Noah Fifita, man. They scored 12 points last week against UCF. Like, it's no way that they should be playing that bad. And they're running to a Houston team who's now finally starting to get its mojo, its find itself. And it all changed when they got the Louisiana Lafayette transfer, Zion Chris, in there on the center. And he brought the dual threat to the team. Isn't that great of a thrower? He was 11 out of 11 for 103, touchdown, no interception against Kansas State. So he's efficient, but he definitely is a great runner, man. He's really athletic. I'm going to just stick to the rules on this one, man. If the line looks funny, it's probably money, man. And I think that the message that Willie Fritz wanted to get across at Houston is finally getting there, and they're starting to look like those Tulane teams, being able to run the ball, having athletes at the skill position, and being really good defensively. So I think that the University of Houston goes on the road and dominates this one. So give me the Cougars. That's an official play.
All right. You're on the Cougars. All right. We're going to give out the ball in parlay. Because I know you know people. What's going on in Chicago? I'm talking about the Bears. Okay. With Caleb Williams. I'm hearing lots of reports that his receivers, specifically DJ Moore, do not like the kid. Is this all true? Is it being blown up in the media? And if so, what does that mean for his future?
They don't like him. They don't like him because he's an entitled little twerp. Like he his dad is a G and good people. And his dad, of course, is going to put his son in the best situation in life, like we all want to do for our kids. But his son is one of those little kids who think his shit don't stink. And when you're moving around like that and people continue to breathe life into your arrogance, then you're setting yourself up for extreme downfall. The worst thing that happened for Caleb Williams' professional career was going to the Chicago Bears. One, the Chicago Bears as an organization have not been successful developing a quarterback ever. They just don't develop quarterbacks well. They've never had a top quarterback, even when they won the Super Bowl. When you and I were barely alive, what happened? They had Jim McMahon. Jim McMahon was never known as a passer. He was a guy who just kind of was a tough guy and ran around and made good commercials. He never was known for being all this great efficient passer. So they've never had a good quarterback, man. So that's the one thing he had going against him, was going to an organization that develops linebackers much better than quarterbacks. And then after that, he gets Matt Eberflus, and Matt Eberflus is such a guy desperate to win that he wants the baby Caleb. He had already decided he was going to take him early in the year, so they sabotage Justin Fields, get rid of him, could have had him on a really small contract and end up going with Caleb Williams. And instead of him coming into the building and earning his respect with the veterans, he told the veterans he was hands off. You can't haze him. You can't. He's the leader of the team. He's our quarterback. Listen to him. He's coming there telling guys who've been in that locker room for 7-8 years, you guys are dirty. Clean up. What the hell are you talking about? You're a kid. You don't come in this locker room talking to us like this, grown men with families to feed. But they allowed it. They babied him. Ryan Poles and those guys made him the leader without him earning the right to lead. And now that's what they're dealing with. So now they're in a situation with a quarterback who already we saw from when he was crying in USC in his mama's lap. That's emotionally unstable. He's not the toughest guy emotionally. And how does he deal with losing now? Like, he looked good in a couple games against sorry competition, but he's also in a spot where they misused him. They just fired the OC, so we see if we get a change this year. But to me, they're doing everything they can to make this kid successful. And when you're good, just like kind of like Jaden Daniels, you're going to see it. When you're good, like how you see the young kid up there in New England, you're starting to see that he can play. I don't see that with Caleb Williams, and I didn't at USC because I told you guys he's not disciplined. But what he can do is he can throw. He's an accurate passer, but he has to learn that his game has to be from the pocket instead of trying to play backyard football.
All right, and I'm not ready to give up on him yet, but definitely some concerning news because I'll put up with the interceptions, misreads, or whatever is development. But when your teammates, especially a veteran guy like DJ Moore, I mean, that's not Antonio Brown, right? I mean, DJ Moore is known for being a hard worker, never had any problems with any teammates in the past, and he played with pretty poor teammates, and he never called any of them out, right? I mean, he was over on the Carolina Panthers, didn't cause any problems even when they were really at the bottom of the league. So a little bit concerning for me because I can have a running back or even a tackle, right, that maybe the rest of the guys don't get along with. But quarterback, as much as it is your play on the field, it's also a leadership position as well. So, you know, I'm not ready to write him off yet, but definitely some things that he's going to need to work on if he's going to make it in this league. So it's time for the people's segment, the ball and parlay. What do you got for the people?
Man, we're going with tonight's play. I'm going to get it up in enough time for you guys to get it. We're going to ride with Eastern Michigan, man, plus 11 tonight. I've always been a fan of Chris Creighton. He's a really good coach over there. He comes and brings a lunch pail type of attitude to their team. And they're always versatile, where they can throw the ball and run the ball. They always play solid defense. That's Max Crosby's old school. The first time I saw Max Crosby was him playing on Mac Tuesdays and Wednesdays under Chris Creighton. So I'm going to have to ride with them. Great fact right here is that in Eastern Michigan games under Chris Creighton, that he's been two-score regular season underdogs 25 times. He's 19-6, and he's 7-2 in the last 3 years in those situations. So I think he does it again for us. Give us Eastern Michigan plus 11.
All right, I'm going to head to the association five-star. And, yeah, we'll have to get this one up because mine tips at the same time as you. And this is one of those tough plays that I think a lot of people just watching the show are going to be surprised because the New York Knicks are, to me, a true contender in the Eastern Conference. You know, a couple things break wrong for Boston. I think the Knicks and the Cavaliers are right there to try and take that mantle. And tonight, they're hosting the Chicago Bulls. And I'm on the Chicago Bulls. And the Chicago Bulls are maybe a play-in team, maybe a lottery team. So you're thinking, spread, why are we doing this? Well, look at the schedule. It's 3-4 for the New York Knicks. And last night, I know that the game seemed pretty easy, but that's a big game for New York. That New York-Philadelphia rivalry is a big game, and even though Embiid didn't really play that well and the game ended up not being too close, that still is a lot of emotion for that game. And you know, at the beginning of their week, when the players and the team was planning their week, that was the game. NBA Cup rival, the team we eliminated from the playoffs, are going to be gunning for us. So it's a lit down spot here for the New York Knicks. Also, five-star, Jalen Brunson actually left the game in the third quarter with a sprained ankle. Now, he was able to come back and he finished the game. However, we know how that goes, right, five-star? I've sprained a ton of ankles. People can't believe it because you see me jump. You go, how do you get high enough to sprain your ankle? But I managed to pull it off somehow. And we all know it's way worse the day after than it is the actual day. So if he's not 100%, it gives us another reason to like Chicago as well. I'm not brave enough to take the money line, however, five-star. Just give me the 9 points. Give me Chicago Bulls plus 9.
All right, you heard that their spread's going with the Bulls plus 9, right, spread?
Yeah, plus 9 in New
York.
Plus
9, and I'm on the mighty Eastern Michigan Fighting Eagles, I believe.
Yeah, I think I wrote that game up for that. I don't even know who they are.
I forgot that.
They are Eagles, and that's Ohio has some Bobcats.
Yeah, that's what I thought. They're the Eagles. So, old five-star still has it. So give me Eastern Michigan plus 11, man. And spreads taking Bulls plus 9. We appreciate you guys as always for tuning into the Wager World. Hit that like button. Anything for the people, spread before we get out of here.
Man, we got more to talk about on Friday. This show could have been 3 hours long, but a lot of my NFL questions I got for you, we're going to discuss them on Friday, and we got some big games. Steelers taking on the Ravens. Steelers taking on the Ravens. Chiefs play the Bills. That one's in Buffalo. And then Sunday night, we got the Bengals and the Chargers. Chargers might be able to effectively eliminate Cincinnati with the win. And Harbaugh's not a guy I'd want to be playing with my season on the line. So can't wait to break down those games with you guys on Friday.
The Bengals and Chargers game should be called the Media Darling Bowl, because those are the two quarterbacks that the media loves the most, Herbert and Burrow.
You can love me in there. I'm a big fan of both guys, too.
Should be fun. All right, guys, hit that like button right now. We appreciate everyone who's watching the Wager World right now with us. You are the Wager World. Guys, continue to win with us. Bet these bets straight, and you're going to be up, up, up. And that's the whole goal. This is our pro bono work, because the book pays us. The book is the only one that can afford us. We do this for the underground and the underdogs. And it's always us versus the machine. As always, I dedicate this show to my father, the greatest Houston sports fan I know. That's John H. Lindsay. We'll see you guys on Friday. I cannot wait to talk about this weekend's games. It's going to be a huge weekend in college football and the pros, man. This is the Wager World.